I will call the remote hearing of the Local Government Division to order. Today is March 24th, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance of Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. And Josh, if you would take the roll, please.
All right, got a microphone this time, so we are all set. Good morning.
Good.
Representative Mason.
Present.
Representative Elkins.
Present.
Representative Quam.
Present.
Representative Byrd.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Mecklen. Representative Olson. Representative Joachim. Representative Mecklen. Representative Olson. Gotcha. Representative Olson. Representative Joachim. Everyone but Representative Olson and Joachim are present.
Okay, thank you. And I see that Olson's name is on the list, though. Okay, thank you so much. So we do have a quorum. The next item on the agenda is the minutes for March 17th, 2021. Representative Elkins, have you read the minutes?
I have, and I will move their approval.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes stand approved as read. Thank you. As announced in the official notice, today we will be holding an informational hearing and no action will be taken. The bill is more in the purview of the Agriculture and Environmental Committees, and right now it is residing in the Environmental Committee. And it's been heard by both committees, but we thought it was important for people in local government to hear it as well, because it has a major impact on cities. So Representative Vang, welcome to the committee, and would you present your bill, please?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to hear House File 718. This bill shares two things that Minnesota values: our outdoors and local control. Pollinators, as we all know, are the basic building blocks of our environmental ecosystem. Not only do they play a critical role in our food system, they also play a critical role in saving our outdoors. If communities want to protect their treasured wildlife, such as pollinators, or the health and safety of their residents, they will be best equipped to respond to declining environmental concerns due to pesticides, and values the city making those decisions. This bill adds a narrow exception that if a city passes an ordinance, it can tell its residents that they cannot use the pesticides that are on the list maintained by the Department of Agriculture. We at the state set the bar, and the ordinance that the city chooses to adopt cannot be more restrictive than what it is on this bill. And with that, Madam Chair, I will yield the rest of my testimony to my testifiers, who can speak more about the importance of this bill.
Thank you. First on the list, we have Craig Johnson from League of Minnesota Cities.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. We are pleased to be able to be here to support the discussion of House File 718. It is, as was described by the author, a very helpful local control bill. Many communities around the state are looking at how they can potentially impact the damage that is happening to pollinators that occurs within city borders. And previously, the statute only allowed for certain types of registration and certification of applicators. That was such a complex process that actually no city ever chose to undertake that. Most cities just have got a yard signage requirement in ordinance. So within a certain period of time after you have applied pesticides, you need signage up. As this was looked at, it was determined that there was a simpler way to do this, which is to leave the control of the pesticide determinations with the Department of Agriculture, where they have the expertise and the science necessary to make those calls, and simply have local government able to adopt by ordinance a list of products that is not allowed for sale and use within their jurisdiction if they decide that that is something they need to do at the local level. So it is optional. A city would choose to apply this ordinance. It would still require an action of the council to adopt that ordinance, but they would not be able to select which chemicals it applied to. It would apply to the list determined by the Department of Agriculture. And so we see this as a very helpful option for cities in their toolbox of things they can do to address local concerns, but does still provide a good, safe level of scientific scrutiny so that we do not have cities being targeted for being arbitrary in which chemicals they apply to. So very much appreciate the language in the bill and have worked with the author on it and are glad that it's moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, John Gaeta.
Good morning. John Gaeta testifying on behalf of RISE. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on HF 718, a bill which would erode pesticide preemption in Minnesota. RISE, Responsible Industry for a Sound Environment, is the national trade association which represents the manufacturers, formulators, distributors of specialty pesticides and fertilizers. Our industry strongly opposes this legislation. Pesticides are regulated at both the federal and state level. In Minnesota, the Department of Agriculture is responsible for testing, reviewing, and authorizing the use of pesticides within the state. This system works because highly trained and educated regulators have the know-how and the resources to regulate pesticides. This bill would allow the 800 plus cities in Minnesota to regulate B-toxic insecticides, which would completely undermine the authority of the state. Recently, RISE conducted a study of 1,000 adults in the U.S. and asked them their opinions on how pesticides are regulated. The results were staggering. 80% of respondents agreed that the current way pesticides are regulated by the federal EPA and in conjunction with a one state regulatory body, that was the proper way to manage pesticides. The Department of Agriculture registers pesticides, licensed pesticide applicators, they conduct research on pesticides, and they are responsible for enforcement activities. Uniform state law ensures that pesticides are labeled correctly and that there is a clear understanding on how to distribute, sell, store, transport, use, and dispose of pesticides. Allowing cities the authority to regulate pesticides would be a disaster for this state. As our country emerges from the pandemic, I can't think of a worse way to put new monetary burdens on local governments. We must remain confident in the science and respect the regulatory framework that already exists within the state. In addition to my testimony today, I have submitted written comments for the record. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify on this matter.
Thank you. And next we have Chris Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Yes, my name is Chris Cowan. I'm a contract lobbyist with the Pesticide Action Network, and we work with the Minnesota Environmental Partnership and their pollinator cluster. Thanks for having me here this morning. Just a few highlights. As has been stated, House File 718 is an option for cities. It doesn't make cities do anything. It's an option that they can choose to have to ban the use of pollinator lethal pesticides as defined by the label. But I'd like to speak to why this is needed and why it's a good idea. And currently, the Environmental Protection Agency laws, in conjunction with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and I want to add, I don't blame the Department of Agriculture. Their job and duties is defined by the law, and hence we are here, you as legislators, determining, of course, what those laws are. So, but the EPA and the MDA, the primary focus is the label is the law, following the label. And I'd like to say that there's a lot of evidence that's mounting that the current setup of following the label is not adequate to protect our environment here in Minnesota. And I'd just like to give just a small number of examples. This all kind of started out, this discussion, at least when I joined in several years ago, talking about honeybees and beekeepers and the losses that they have, which is easy to measure because honeybees are kind of like livestock. They're kept by humans and they're kept track of. So beekeeper losses used to be 10-15%. I kept bees for several years, but it just got to be too hard. The equipment is stacked up in my daughter's garage, and maybe not this coming year, but next year we might give it another try. But beekeeper losses used to be 10-15%. Now for the past 10 years, beekeepers' losses have averaged close to 40%. And you don't feel the impact of honeybee losses as much because the beekeepers can replace queens and create new hives. But two things about that. One, it's a lot of time and energy expended by the beekeeper to do that. And secondly, we need to look at why is that happening. And in the case of honeybees, it would be three things that most experts would agree on. And that would be varroa mites, a lack of clean forage, and pesticide use. The other things that have happened just recently that indicate kind of the ubiquitous nature of many pesticides, and I don't think that's an understatement. There's been, or an overstatement, there's been studies that have shown that pesticides show up in the food served at the United States Capitol, that folks at the U.S. Capitol eat. There's been studies that indicate that songbirds have been, there's been a big decline, steep decline, as reported by National Geographic back in 2019, steep decline in songbird populations, and pesticides have played a role in that. And closer to home, our own DNR, Department of Natural Resources, followed up on a study that was conducted by South Dakota State University. And what they did was, is that they basically fed deer or provided them with water. They were captive deer that were provided water that had neonics in it. And they tried to approximate the amount of deer that they thought deer would be exposed to, low, medium, and high. And they found out when doing this that it had a negative impact on the deer's organs and their development and their bone structure. And what they also found out after studying deer from the wild, that their numbers were actually low. So the Department of the DNR in 2019 asked deer hunters to bring spleens when they hunt, to return spleens to bring spleens to the DNR for study to see the neonic that accumulated in those spleens. And the results of that had just come out in the last month. And the main thing, one of the things that comes out from that study is that there were neonics found in deer spleens all across the state of Minnesota, far from where many people expected to see it. From one corner of the state to the other, that map is available from the DNR. And also, the amount that was found in many cases far exceeded the benchmarks that the South Dakota State study cited as having an impact on the survivability of fawns. So these are just some of the things that indicate that the current setup is not working. House File 718 would allow cities to, if they choose, to use this option to address the issue. And in closing, I'd just like to say that this is not unheard of. At the national level, the FIFRA law for pesticide regulation is a floor, and states can go above it. But Minnesota is one of the states that does not allow local units of government to treat state law as a floor. It's a ceiling, and it's a low ceiling. And there's local control is allowed in seven states in the United States, and it works fine. And there's several other states that have the option to get local control. So I usually say ask your support in supporting House File 718. I'll do that today. But any questions that you have, I'll try to answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Is there anyone else that would like to testify? Okay, seeing no one, I'll ask the first question. I know my neighbor was not using pesticides on their lawn because they were afraid it would impact their dog. Because their dog was in my yard, I obviously stopped using pesticides as well. So is that just, if somebody can ask, so were we being a little bit on the extreme caution side? Or if you do have animals, do you have to be careful when pesticides are being used? Is there someone that would like to answer that?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Cowan.
I would guess, thank you, Madam Chair, of the supporters of this, I'm probably the person who knows something about that. I am not an entomologist. I am not an expert. I'm a lobbyist, and I rely on smart people to tell me what's going on and the answers to such questions. I will say, though, that there was a recent study that was just printed in USA Today that pointed out the dangers of pesticides in flea collars for cats and dogs, and it was the EPA that pointed this out. But Madam Chair, I'm afraid I don't know the answer to the question, and it would probably have to do with how much of what kind of pesticide they might be exposed to.
Okay, thank you. Representative Elkins.
Just a question. I'm not sure who would know the answer, but are neonicotinoids commonly being used on parks and golf courses?
I'm happy to answer that from the registrant perspective. Yes, golf courses specifically do rely on neonic technology. Parks, and again, a city has the option to regulate what type of pesticides they are using. There's no reason to be putting new laws on the books. If a city decides to do something, they can do that without laws. So, a lot of cities do rely on neonics to maintain their parks.
Thank you very much. Is there a counter, Representative Elkins?
No, I think so. I would agree if that's the case, if it's a municipal park or golf course, but if it's a private golf course in the middle of a city, that wouldn't necessarily be the case without the statute.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there a person from the Department of Ag on this committee meeting that could answer some questions?
Madam Chair.
Let's see. Ms. Place, if you'd like, proceed, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Whitney Place. I serve as Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. And would you like to respond? Or we need the question.
No, Madam Chair. I'd like to ask a few questions. One, what is the official position of the Department of Ag on this bill?
Ms. Place.
Madam Chair, Representative. Yes, so we are open to exploring this bill, but there are some concerns that we would like to see addressed. We do regulate pesticides in Minnesota, and first of all, if a city can establish an ordinance, it might be difficult to manage all of the different regulatory requirements across the state. And if there are a lot of different ordinances passed, we might need additional resources to delegate that authority. This bill doesn't preclude MDA from using our own authority within city jurisdictions, but also adds authority to cities. Chemicals that they choose. So this could create difficulty if there was an instance where there was a misuse issue in terms of who's in charge of the investigation and how enforcement would be applied according to the ordinances of each different city. And then I think some of our concerns were addressed in the Agriculture Committee earlier this week. Reducing kind of the number of chemicals that would be on this pollinator lethal list down to just the classes of neonicotinoids and chlorpyrifos.
Thank you. Representative Quam, counter.
Madam Chair, I don't consider asking questions from department people as a counter. I'm asking questions to get information because I thought this meeting, since we local government, which is in charge of regulations that are granted and powers granted to local government, hasn't had a actual hearing, as in the bill being in our committee, hasn't had an opportunity to offer amendments to improve the bill. That actually, if this is just informational, and we're not allowed to improve the bill, that we could ask questions to be informed, as opposed to counter back and forth. But I don't consider getting information as adversarial. I would like to find out what instances pesticides are used for either public health, control of evasive species. Get an idea of why the Department of Ag may want to have a policy universal across the state. So if the person for the Department of Ag could give some information on that, that would be considered useful to me.
Okay, I didn't mean that to be adversarial. I'll just use the word response from now on. And Ms. Place, would you like to respond?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. And in terms of the use of pesticides from a public health perspective, I think Representative Vang has addressed some of those issues in this bill, including, exemptions for things like mosquito control. We know that pesticides like this are also used for things like bed bugs or structural control of pests. And, we would like to see that continue. A couple of years ago, we did a really big campaign on bed bugs and making sure that we can control those in a safe way. The other thing for invasive species, that's another big use for things like emerald ash borer or any other sort of invasive species that come along. And so some of these insecticides are used to address those issues from both a city perspective and a personal homeowner and private homeowner perspective.
Thank you. Representative Quam?
Yes, another question is, my understanding is that there are a fair amount of people, adults and children, that have allergies to insect stings. And some of these are life-threatening. And that some parents would take measures either by themselves or hiring people to control, a wasp, different nests, and decrease the risk to their children's lives on their property. And it seems as if there's the possibility that this could prevent them from legally doing so. Am I interpreting things correctly? And this, again, is to the person from the Department of Ag.
Ms. Place, please.
Madam Chair, Representative, it would depend on what kind of ordinance the city would choose to pass and which classes of chemicals and who would be able to use those chemicals, depending on the ordinance. But what I can just say for right now is that there are certain chemicals that as a homeowner can go purchase to control things like a wasp nest or other sorts of pests in your yard. And then once it gets to a point where the chemicals might be a little more unsafe, we call those restricted use pesticides. We actually test and license applicators to go apply those things. So if you hire somebody to come to your home to treat it, that person is licensed, and we have a testing system. So they're licensed by the state of Minnesota to make sure that they know how to use those chemicals.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Quam.
Thank you. So my understanding is that as current, this bill, if it became law, a city could, under this authority, prevent the illegal use either by a person or a licensed individual or company from utilizing certain pesticides to control, hornets and other things that, could pose a risk to their themselves or their families. And, that's why it'd be nice if we had, since it's under our authority in this committee, the opportunity to try and improve this bill, because allowing local government the restriction of personal actions is part of what this committee would do, and that's an area that I have some concerns, because frankly we have experts at the Department of Ag who understand the complexities of where things are used, understand this is the continuing training or whatever aspects are involved in licensure for the utilization of products. Understands that we don't know what the new emerald ash borer issue that might pop up, that you would want to have a statewide policy for management for, who knows if it's a public health issue or if it's just a issue to, agriculture or, et cetera. There's a lot of unknowns that are involved in this, and that's why we have experts in our different departments to keep up to date on the things that come out. I'm not familiar that the USA Today is a scientific journal publishing peer-reviewed studies. So I would prefer people that actually read the scientific journals and are up to date on the information to be the arbiters, and not someone that happens to pick up the paper and read an article and get worried about something and make changes that have unknown and unintended consequences. I mean, that's why we have the discussion in our committees, and we bring in the experts and people in the different departments and agencies to have a discussion so we can avoid unintended consequences or even understood possible issues. That responsibility and due diligence is part of what us as a legislature need to do. I understand the intent, and I agree that we have to be careful that we don't cause, damage to pollinators and other species. I just think that it would be nice to have the full aspect of this committee brought forward on issues like this, because it's the domain of the committee. So, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Pewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess before I start here, Representative Quam, I really feel that we are doing our job here, and this is part of the job of the legislator to basically pass down some of these requests that the cities are making of us. And in this case, I know my own cities, the two of them, consult a lot with the state agencies on when they do ordinances. But I guess my real question is for, and I'm going to probably not do justice to your name here, John Gaeta. Is that, am I saying it right?
It is correct.
All right, thank you, sir. You made a very strong statement in when you were talking there about this would be a disaster to the state. I would like you to elaborate on what you were saying and how this would actually be a disaster to the state of Minnesota.
Yes, in our eyes, we do not see this bill as a simple opt-out program or something as easy as it's being sold. We believe that if you were to properly do this, you would probably be in a situation where each city, if they're getting into the business of regulating pesticides, they would have to add new staff members to review pesticides. They would have to add new staff members to enforce pesticide use. Investigators, honestly, this is something that, you know, from our point of view, we see you adding new layers of bureaucracy when the state is doing a fantastic job through the Department of Agriculture. So that is our point of view.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hewitt.
Well, our job as legislators are to do exactly what we're doing here and making sure that we're listening to our constituents and especially our cities. In fact, John, you gave me a great idea as my next survey that I'll hand out to my constituents, because even though your numbers were there saying that people think we're over-regulating this area, I tend to disagree, and I don't know because I don't have the analytical data, but I'm definitely going to ask my constituents if this is true. This is one of the top subjects in my area in the suburbs about our pesticide use and what we're doing. I haven't had a lot of time to talk to my own cities about it, but I am concerned. And so, Representative Vang, thank you so much for bringing this bill. I think this is a great bill, and I look forward to working with you on it. Chair, thanks for doing an informational hearing today. I think this is a wonderful bill to do this with.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a real quick comment. My comment is, I don't believe that city mayors and city council members have the expertise to say what is right and what is wrong for the environment. They don't have those forms of education, and all they would be running off of is whatever statistics and data is provided by whatever organization or group they determine that they're going to want to angle in on. You can find statistics from any single side, anytime, and I don't know if they would do the due diligence that we even are doing here as their city council. So I could see it. Someone comes into the city council, says, I think we need to ban this certain pesticide because for some reason I personally don't like it. In my city, we had someone walk in who said, I want you to ban this chemical from all use in the city. And we said that infringes upon other individuals' property rights. Just stay off their property and you'll be okay. And I think that at some point in time, we have to let the experts make decisions. And I think that the experts do make the decisions. And I think soon we may in fact see the experts make decisions on this issue. And then we won't even have to make these decisions when we in fact are not the experts on it. Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Let's see. I'm not seeing any questions right now, so I would like to ask one. I thought one of the testifiers mentioned some statistics about neonics in deer. Now, deer are pretty big animals. So my question, if those statistics are true, and the deer are being impacted by some of these chemicals, what chance does a bee have? And if there's anybody, I would think all of the testifiers probably are in a position to answer that, but that would be really helpful, I think. Ms. Place, do you want to go first, maybe, since you're the official regulator, so to speak?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the deer study, I would have to defer to the Department of Natural Resources. They're the agency that conducted the study, and I'm just not, you know, familiar with the methodology used. In terms of pollinators, you know, these are insecticides, and so it's not with it's not outside of the realm that they would impact pollinator populations. And so, you know, we do need to use these chemicals cautiously. And at the Department of Agriculture, we've done a lot of work over the past couple of years on developing best management practices to make sure that we're using them in a way that does not impact pollinator populations, especially some of our most vulnerable species and our endangered species across Minnesota. So both in agricultural context, but also within city landscapes. And I'm happy to share those best management practice documents with the committee after this hearing.
Okay, that would be great. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I think
the other is,
Madam Chair, I think Mr. Johnson has his hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see that. Mr. Johnson, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, Craig Johnson, League of Minnesota Cities. Just in response to some of the discussion that's been going on about city authorities, the legislation that you are looking at right now is very specific. It says that what a city can do is choose by ordinance to implement sections 3 and the new section 4 of this section of statute. We do not have the ability to go chemical by chemical and determine which chemicals we want to exclude. We don't have any responsibility to do that. That's entirely the Department of Agriculture. So I would argue that there is no pending disaster in the state where cities would go through and make a quilt work of different chemicals regulated in different cities. The Department of Agriculture would have a list of pollinator lethal pesticides, and a city could choose by ordinance to prohibit the use of that list in their jurisdiction. That's the only authority that this legislation gives, and it very specifically has a list of exemptions for public health and safety purposes attached to it that have been worked out over the last two committees that the bill has visited. So, Madam Chair, I would just say this is not something where you see local governments running every which direction, and very much agree with Representative Olson, who does have experience as a mayor. We would not want cities with their very limited resources to have to try and identify which of the chemicals in the world belong on the list. The Department of Agriculture does that in this bill, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the Department of Agriculture believes something should be banned, restricted, then they actually do that, and they have the experts. And if something isn't banned, restricted, isn't required to have a person certified that has the training, then there's a reason for that. And frankly, saying just because the Department of Ag has it on a list to monitor or keep track of and et cetera, doesn't mean that the city has the expertise to overrule the degree of control that the Department of Ag exercises and its duties to the state. So the argument is that, well, we're going to pick a individual chemical or product because we saw it on the news. But if the city see, you know, someone in the city sees something and is highly concerned, they can wholeheartedly affect the entire list of entities because of a personal concern of an individual one. Well, frankly, our citizens probably need to have the experts that are setting the policy by the state, plus the ones that can, something pops up and happens, they can react to actual science, actual peer-reviewed studies, etc., and the situation across the state or part of the state to effectively respond. And, you know, frankly saying, well, it's fine because they can't pick on one, they would just be affecting all. And Now, the responsiveness is lost if, the Department of Ag's authority is diluted on this. Either we trust them or we don't. And frankly, they take steps that the national organizations might not, because they know Minnesota. They've got people that know the different situations, species, et cetera. And no offense to anyone that's sitting on a city council, but they don't have the expertise, so they would be responding. And oftentimes, passion and emotion has us respond in things that are counter to what science, reason, logic, and experience would lead us to do. So, again, either we, trust in the Department of Ag, or we say they're superfluous and that any local government entity can decide to do what it wishes to do, and that would severely impact the effectiveness of any statewide or regional activities by our experts. And again, this bill could possibly be fixed if we could really have it in committee and amend it and go over the details. Now it's just sort of, we talk about it, and if something does happen or move with the bill, it doesn't have the detailed attention that it normally would get if we actually had it in our committee. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I have one question for Mr. Johnson. Did you testify in the Environment Committee?
Madam Chair, Craig Johnson, League of Minnesota Cities. Yes, testified in the Environment Committee and submitted written testimony to the Agriculture Committee.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hewitt?
I guess I'm having trouble seeing in the bill where it says either or. I believe this is an and. I mean, it's the cities can do this, but still be partnered with the Department of Agriculture and doing the right thing. I guess that I'm having trouble understanding why that will still not continue. The state will, I mean, the Department of Agriculture is still on here. Do you see yourselves working with cities more if this were to go through, Ms. Place?
Ms. Place, I guess I'm gonna start with you to respond, if that's okay.
Madam Chair Representative, yes, I guess we would definitely need to work more with cities. But just for a little more context about how our authority from FIFRA exists. So we are delegated authority from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for FIFRA. And we come up with a cooperative agreement, and that cooperative agreement with EPA is how we regulate pesticides in Minnesota. What is unclear with a lot of these preemption bills that have come up over the years is how to delegate that authority to cities. And we have had instances where, not in pesticides, but in other authorities, where it didn't work out so well when the authority was delegated to cities. We have not gotten clear answers from EPA on how we would be able to delegate pesticide authority to cities. We continue to be in dialogue with them about this issue to see how that would actually work. But from a legal standpoint, we are the delegated authority through our cooperative agreement with EPA. So yes, we always want to be working with cities in terms of promoting best management practices and making sure that pesticides are used appropriately and safely. But that's kind of where some of the questions come up from the legal perspective.
Mr. Johnson, do you want to respond as well?
Madam Chair, I would just say that we already work closely with the Department of Agriculture in many instances, especially related to emerald ash borer and other invasive species, where they are the emergency responders in the state. We would continue to do that. And I think, you know, there's a very limited number of cities that are looking at this sort of action right now. I think a lot of those have probably already been in pretty regular contact with the Department of Agriculture to investigate what their options are under current statute. I would only add in addition on the other topics being discussed in the last few minutes, there is a big difference between banning a pesticide statewide for any use and deciding that it may not be appropriate for use in urban applications of certain types in concentrated populated areas. Those are not the same question necessarily, which is why I think the author has chosen to craft a bill that focuses in on that rather than do a statewide ban on the chemical family. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hugh, do you have any more? You know, does it answer your question or?
Madam Chair, it does. Thank you for calling on me again.
Okay, thank you. Representative Quam?
Chair, and I guess I must have been mistaken when this bill would affect authority and powers across all cities, since the testifier said only a limited number of cities are looking at this. Well, frankly, the bill isn't limiting to just XYZ or these three or these five cities. This is all cities. And there's a difference there. So the excuse of, oh, there'll only be two or three cities that will look at doing this, and they've been extensively working on it. No, we as a committee are hearing a bill that would affect all cities. So we have to think about what are the impacts, consequences, et cetera, for all cities. Cities of the first class are exempted from certain things. They're granted other powers. And that was and continues to be debated. But to use the excuse of, don't worry, we just have a very few cities that might, well, it's not prudent for us to say, oh, then we don't have to worry about what possible situations might happen. But no, the bill doesn't. We can't offer amendments to restrict it to a certain list of cities. So we have to think about what could happen and how do we avoid issues, problems, unintended consequences, et cetera. That's our job. So, you know, forgive me if I don't take the reassurance, because I wouldn't be doing my due diligence if I took the reassurance, don't worry, everything's fine. The only cities, you know, that might do this are already talking with the department. You know, frankly, you know, this could have impacts that none of us in this committee might have. And just because of that, we have to take this seriously and look at that. But no, I understand this is very important to a certain number of cities, and you know the general topic is broadly important. But when we implement law, we need to look at what that law does might have allowed to happen, and try and address that. So, you know, that's why, you know, when a testifier or somebody answers a question, I raise my hand again, because, you know, it's the whole picture and not just one viewpoint, you know, that we have to look at. But thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm taking that as a comment, and Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank Representative Vang for bringing this bill forward, working with the Department of Ag and trying to tailor it so that it was more permissive. There's plenty of places in state statute where we allow a city to go a little bit above where a state sets a floor for regulation. Smoking ban is one of those. Mr. Johnson, I have a quick question for you, though. Remind me, and I'm pretty sure I'm accurate since I sat on the city council for 9 years, if a city puts an ordinance in place, it doesn't set in stone, right? The next election cycle or the next city council can remove that ordinance or change it. This doesn't say this bill nowhere in Representative Vang, maybe you can answer to, says that once the city decides to do this, it can never change.
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Joaquin, you are correct in your memory. City council actions are legislative, just like state legislatures are, and can be changed by a future legislative decision of that body. So this statute does not include in it a lock-in, that if you opt in once, you're in forever. Some sections of law do include that. This does not.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Johnson, one more question too. At the city level, and I'm just familiar with our staff here in Hopkins and St. Louis Park, folks that do use pesticides or chemicals, they usually have the background and the license to be able to decide how to do that safely. Are there usually regulations within the city on who's applying these, and are they pretty careful about that?
Mr. Johnson?
Madam Chair, Representative Joaquin, if I'm understanding the question correctly, yes, most cities do want to make sure that applicators are properly certified and licensed, but that is a responsibility of the Department of Agriculture. Cities under current law have the authority to do that if they choose, but none have chosen to because it's very complicated. And frankly, as has been discussed, the Department of Ag is the expert on how are you supposed to do that correctly. And so their certification and licensure is what cities would typically say is necessary for commercial applications in their jurisdictions.
Representative Joaquin.
Last more comment then. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Thank you, Madam Chair. So it looks like the system of Department of Ag helping out when cities need help, make sure that what we are doing, that there is expertise at that level. And I only bring that up because I was a little concerned when I heard folks talk about cities not knowing what they're doing or not having the expertise. They can phone a friend. They can call the Department of Ag when they're making these decisions. And I have confidence in our local elected officials when it comes to something like this, about listening to their constituents and some of the concerns and questions they have around pesticides. This is driven, and I hate to use the word organically, but it has been driven organically across the state in many of our communities. I'm sure you've all seen the lawn signs that say be friendly yards, and people really take this seriously. They're concerned, and I think this is just one more tool in the city's toolbox so that they could be responsive to their constituents and do it in a thoughtful manner. So thank you, Representative Bang.
Thank you. For the other testifiers, if you wanted to talk, if you could raise your hand or let me know. I'm sorry, I probably should have said that in the first place. But I'm not seeing any hands at this point. I just want to emphasize something that Representative Hewitt has talked about before. I know so many people that have pollinator-friendly yards. I mean, it's and actually one of my friends actually is certified for that, which I thought, I didn't know that they did that, but they do. So in at least in the area where I live, this is incredibly important about the use of chemicals or not. So I think it is something that we have to at least be cognizant of that, because it's not just one or two. And I remember, you know, this one family, for instance, actually raises butterflies. And then I think the one year where the butterflies were not coming, they were not coming out either in the numbers or as healthy as they normally did. And the, you know, maybe the conclusion that they came to is that their neighbor might have been sparing pesticides that might have come over into their yard. Now, I'm assuming that would be a little bit more difficult to go ahead and prove something like that. But nevertheless, as I said, this is an important issue, and especially when we're told that the pollinators are indeed being killed off in large numbers. So if anybody has any last comments, I am not seeing any hands raised.
I can share the last
Thank you. I'd like to do a wrap up for Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will just say that this is a good bill. This bill strikes the right balance. We've mentioned a lot about experts, and there are experts with environmental concerns about how our pollinators are doing. This bill strikes the right balance between experts with environmental concerns and those experts in who are in chemical use. And so, and it also strikes the right balance between cities and state authorities. So this is a good bill that meets both sides, and I appreciate the committee support and for the opportunity to hear this bill.
Thank you very much for being with us today, and thank you for all of our testifiers. For planning and scheduling purposes, this will be our last regularly scheduled meeting of the Local Government Division in 2020-21. And if we have a need for any special meetings, it will be at the call of the chair. And I do want to thank all of our members and staff for all their work. This meeting is adjourned. Have a good day.